Now that is what you call a rally. Oh my gosh, have you guys been watching shares of DJT? I hear Letitia is. She's not too happy. We're going to talk all about the run-up in the stock price of Donald Trump's social media company. All I can say is, take that, lady. Oh my goodness. Okay, we're going to talk about that. Plus, I told you yesterday about the mutiny, the revolt that was going on over at NBC, MSNBC. Well, now these liberal anchors, they've band together so much so that according to the New York Post, guess what? Ron McDaniel is totally, I almost said Ronald again. I can't help myself. Ronald McDonald. I keep wanting to say that. I apologize. But anyway, Ronna is going to be out. She's apparently in discussion with her lawyers. We're seeking representation like as we speak. It's wild. I mean, the inmates really are running the asylum over there. They say you can come and join them, but only if you're a Never Trumper. Is that the deal? This is cancel culture on steroids. On steroids, we've got an update on that unfortunate situation there in Baltimore that I need to bring you on that bridge. Plus, preachy females. James Carville, the former Democrat. Well, I guess he's still a Democrat strategist. Apparently, he's working for Biden these days. He's calling it like it is, though. He said preachy females are going to ruin things for Biden altogether. They're going to lose the election because of these preachy females. Interesting times when James Carville and Trish Regan agree. James Carville, Trish Regan, Jesse Waters, and Greg Gutfeld all agree. I'm going to bring you some of the comments from some of these Fox anchors who, as you can imagine, are having a little bit of fun with it. And, oh gosh, Larry Fink, he runs like the biggest asset management company in the world. He used to talk about ESG all the time. Well, now he's talking about something that actually does make sense. Again, interesting times. I'm agreeing with James Carville. And now suddenly, Larry Fink of BlackRock, he actually said something kind of important. I'm going to weigh in on that. Plus, very special guest for you today, none other than my co-founder of 76 Research, Rob Horton. He's going to be in the house. He's going to talk to us about dividend investing. Because you know what? You actually do need to look out for your future. You need to look out for your retirement. And I want you to see this. So, big show lined up. Welcome, everyone, to the program. I am Trish Regan. This is the Trish Regan Show. We are brought to you, as always, by our wonderful friends over at LegacyPMInvestments.com. Talking about looking out for your retirement. That's what these guys are doing. They want you to look at investing in gold. As I've told you over and over and over again, gold is one of those diversification tools that can come in really handy. You want to look at gold if you're trying to prevent yourself from having all your dollars eaten up by all this inflation that is inevitable. It's been bad, like worse than usual, right, under Biden. But it's always bad, and that's a problem. So take a look at gold. Call them at 1-866-589-0560, 1-866-589-0560. You're welcome to use my name, of course. And go check out their website as well. You know, you can buy and sell and trade this stuff right there online. All right, straight to DJT. DJT, that is the ticker of the moment, the ticker of the day. It just debuted on Wall Street, on the New York Stock Exchange. And ladies and gentlemen, wow. I mean, this stock price, this is, it's up 45% today, $72.36 at last check. But it's just been climbing and climbing and climbing and climbing. And just to back up a little bit, remember, he's got this thing called Truth Social. Donald Trump, former president of the United States, now running again to be the 47th president of the United States. He got kicked off of Twitter. I love this. You know, this is the beauty of America. This is American capitalism at work. You get kicked off of one platform. So guess what? You go and you start your own. And that's what he did. He started Truth Social. And True Social merged with something called DWAC, Digital World Acquisition Corporation, in what's known as a SPAC, Special Purpose Acquisition Corporation. These things, they pool a whole bunch of capital together, and then they go out and they look for something to buy. And so DWAC said, you know, we're going to go buy Trump's True Social. And that's exactly what they did. And then they had to go through all the rigmarole and through all these hurdles because, you know, the SEC, et cetera, is like, what are you doing buying Trump's company? And anytime you're involved with Trump nowadays, it invites a whole level of scrutiny that you might not otherwise have. And so the feds were all over this thing. Nobody wanted to make any money at all. But ultimately, the SEC approved the deal. So then the deal was voted on Friday. Shareholders approved the deal. And today the deal's done. The company is trading no longer as DWAC, but as DJT. How do you like that for a ticker symbol? And it's flying. They can't keep shares of this in stock. You know, this is actually amazing because the company, in fairness, you know, I'm always fair, doesn't have much in the way of earnings. I mean, I've seen estimates between 3 and 6 million and only has some 37 employees. And yet it's worth billions of dollars, making Donald Trump that much richer. Like, he went to bed last night being worth maybe $3.5-4 billion. And he is now today going to go to bed tonight. I know they say he never sleeps, but he's going to be a happy man. He should be dreaming big. Worth over $6.5 billion. He's now getting named to Bloomberg's list of 500 richest people in the world. I mean, he was rich before this. He's really rich right now, assuming it holds up, right? Because, you know, these things are on paper and stocks go up and down. We know all that. And as I said, this is a company that's a little light on revenue and doesn't have that many employees. And so they've got to actually bulk up. But this will give them some capital, one would think, to do it. I mean, it's just amazing where this is trading right now. Does it hold? We'll find out. This is going to be interesting to watch, ladies and gentlemen. And if nothing else, is it not just kind of a really good, how do we say this? I'll just say, is it not a giant F you to Letitia James and New York City and that judge who so desperately wanted to really stick it to him, so much so that they came up with this unheard of, absolutely positively unheard of bond to the tune of $500 million. Well, now he's got like $6 billion. I mean, wow. I mean, he's got 80 million shares of this thing and you see where it's trading. So he's got some, well, that would put his net worth. I'm just doing some rough back of the envelope calculation here. If he had $3 to $3.5 billion when he went to bed last night, now you're looking at another almost $6 billion. I mean, you're talking nearly $10 billion that he is worth. Again, putting him on Bloomberg's list of the 500 richest people in the world. And gee, I mean, Letitia, he may just have the money. Now, a lot of people said, well, wait a second, he can't sell this for 6 months. Turns out that in this particular vehicle, if you need to sell some of your shares, if you've created a certain kind of value for shareholders, there is an opportunity apparently to do so, so long as you have approval of the board of directors, which consists of, well, a lot of his friends. And his son. So he's got his son on the board. He's got Linda McMahon. Remember, she was the small business administrator married to Vince McMahon. You've got Robert Lighthizer. You've got Cash Patel. You guys know Cash. You got quite a team there that I think they're going to say, you know what? You need the $175 million. We're going to give you the $175 million to keep Letitia and company happy. So watch this stock very carefully. Obviously, if he pulls some capital out, shares would go down. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, he is now worth a lot of money. He is a lot richer. And I think there's something kind of cool, kind of neat. And there's a kind of how, can I possibly say like a sweet justice in all of this? I've been talking about that a lot because I'm just amazed at the timing. I said the other day, he's got to have some guardian angel somewhere because this is like poetry. I mean, really, when you have a guy who's so down on his luck as he's being faced with $500 million fine from Letitia and the judge that just hates him, and then he comes back with this. My goodness, right? My goodness. Wow, wow, wow. Yeah, we'll see if it holds. But I think, you know what's going on? People are saying, I feel for him. I want to help him. I like him. And this is their way of expressing that. That's what you are. I mean, people say, oh, it's a meme stock because the earnings aren't there to generate this excitement. But again, you know, it's beauty in the eye of the beholder, right? And if you're somebody who is a Trump fan and wants to back him, maybe you're seeing this as a vehicle
to do that.
And, you know, if you lose money, you're not going to be happy. So I exercise caution with all of these things. I'm just trying to explain the psychology of what's really going on. And I think this is sort of classic meme in that people are excited. They're excited about him. They want him to be president. It could serve as a little bit of a proxy, if you would, for his presidential campaign, which is hurting a little bit in cash, but, you know, they get so many legal bills to pay. So maybe this will help. I mean, of course, it doesn't all come down to cash. Let's remember that. Donald Trump had less cash, a lot less cash than Hillary Clinton, and he still beat her. I mean, it was a really darn close election last time around. Biden had a lot more cash. So I actually don't think it's always about money. It's often about something else. And so if this stock is indicative of what is to come for the future, well, that's really positive news. Now, I want to point out, Wall Street doesn't want to go near this thing. So this is all like mom and pop investors. Wall Street's like, no way. You know, we don't want any part of this. In fact, the bank that took this thing, the SPAC merger, I mean, E.F. Hutton was the name. That's like a name that I used to watch in network television commercials when I was a kid. It was like defunct. It went out of business. It was, by the way, like some kind of brokerage company. Well, it's like the investment bank on this deal. So E.F. Hutton, a name that we don't hear much anymore and we didn't even know was still in existence, it's taking the thing public. I'm telling you, no broker's going to recommend this. And so this all comes down to individuals who see themselves here through this stock and that they like Trump and they want to help him out. I think it's a positive sign for the future. We got a new poll out today. We got a new poll from the likes of Bloomberg, place I used to work. And the new poll actually, oddly, interestingly, shows, we'll start with the good news. Okay, Trump is up. And it's good because you know what? Like I wear this on my sleeve. I am very much somebody who cares passionately about policy. I care about tax policy. I care about border policy. I care about economic policy. I care about trade policy. And hands down, Donald Trump is so much better on all of those policies than Joe Biden never dreamed of being. So this is good. He's way up in Georgia. He's up in Arizona. He's up in Nevada and North Carolina. Pennsylvania, though, he's suddenly tied. Michigan, he's suddenly tied. He had been up there. And Wisconsin, which has been kind of dicey, he's allegedly down by a point. Now, I say allegedly because the margin of error on this particular poll by Bloomberg and Morning Consult is actually 1 point. So you could look at him as being tied possibly in Wisconsin. In the last several months, Wisconsin has been kind of dicey. He's been up or down a percentage point in Wisconsin. So it's closer. Michigan, I do think he's actually going to prevail in Michigan because I think a lot of the union workers there in Michigan have kind of had it with him. And I think his message resonates in part because of all the economic frustration that everybody in Michigan and elsewhere in the country, including Pennsylvania, have been feeling. But those are two battlegrounds where he's going to have to work hard. I mean, like, I'm not kidding. He's going to have to work hard, and he's going to have to get out and do more rallies, et cetera, et cetera. I think in Arizona, issues like the border, they really, really resonate with people. So this is not entirely surprising to me. I still think it bodes very well for the 45th president of the United States coming back as 47. I think it's going to happen, guys. I really do. And you know what I called it in 2016? And, you know, I hate to call these things so early, but I think that the momentum is there. And people that are saying they're going to vote, when you look in the depths of this poll, they're saying they're going to vote for Biden. When you actually say, okay, well, why are you going to vote for Biden? You know what you see? Well, because we don't want Trump. Well, I'm sorry. That is not reason enough on a cold November day in Wisconsin to go to the polls. You actually have to believe in something. You want something to vote for, not just against. I mean, the against part, it can come in handy. I mean, think about Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump voters really didn't like Hillary Clinton back in 2016. Nobody liked Hillary Clinton in 2016 or now, for that matter. And so, sure, a lot of people went out and they voted against Hillary. So a vote for Trump and Corey Lewandowski, who ran the campaign, good New Hampshire guy, live free or die territory. I'm telling you, These are my cups, which you can get at trishregan.shop. Anyway, Corey told me, he's like, look, the reality of this was, it was not just a vote for Trump. And it was, because people believed in him and the economic message he was putting forth, but it was also a vote against Hillary. And so that matters, but ultimately it's still the most important message of all is what you are for. And I think people are for a better, brighter economic future. They're for a more secure nation. And they're for, as a result, Donald Trump and lower tax policies and more freedom for the individual. And so good luck, Biden. Good luck, Biden, who, by the way, you know, we're happy if he gets out of bed on any given day. You know, he's woken up by his tabby cat. I'm not kidding. Daily Mail did a whole thing on this. They profiled his day. And he wakes up every morning to the soft little purrs of his tabby cat coming in at 7 a.m. How lovely to be the president. I wake up a lot earlier than that. And trust me, it's not to a tabby cat. It's to that big, bad alarm clock. Like a normal person, Joe Biden, you are an adult, an 81-year-old adult. Why does it feel like he's regressing all the time? He is. I'm telling you, he is regressing. Anyway, as you look at these poll numbers, it's important to also understand why Joe Biden is failing so badly, right? Why is he not doing better in places like Georgia, Arizona, Nevada, North Carolina? Why is he not killing it in Pennsylvania? I mean, hey, he's the kid from Scranton, right? Who's, by the way, charging some $500,000 a plate at a new fundraiser with himself, Barack Obama, and Bill Clinton. Oh, and you get your picture taken by Annie Leibovitz. Yay, 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 for 500 smackaroos. That's quite a fundraiser. Anyway, why isn't he doing better? I can tell you, one of the reasons he's not doing better is because nobody likes his message on anything. And by the way, yes, it's failed miserably. None of it's worked. You get inflation up better than 18% since he came to office. Incomes are up nowhere close to that. You've got rents up 66%. I mean, this inflation's just been awful. It's one of the reasons why I keep saying, you know, you might want to look at something like gold. 1-866-589-0560. Our friends over at Legacy Precious Metals, they can help you out. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're worried about inflation because you're dealing with the Joe Biden economy, call my friends at Legacy. Because I really do believe that having a diversified portfolio, part of which includes something like precious metals, is something that will help you in the long run. 1-866-589-0560, legacypminvestments.com. But you look at these poll numbers and you say to yourself, well, why? Why on earth is Joe Biden not doing better in places like Pennsylvania, in places like Wisconsin, and in places like Michigan? I mean, for me, it's pretty easy. But I think it's fascinating when you see some of the Democrats actually come forward and tell you the truth on this one. Here's James Carville. So we have the graphic of his quote, because this is just phenomenal. He's basically blaming preachy females for the reason why Joe Biden is not doing better in some of these battleground states. In other words, preachy females who are so concerned about what you eat and whether you're polluting the environment and, you know, do we have to be so soft and cuddly and so all-inclusive and the DEI and the ESG and the you-know-what and the you-know-what. And it's causing everybody to say enough already, especially the men. So James Carville is making the point that, hey, you got a country that's half male. You really want to ignore them all? You really think I'm so sick of NPR telling me that this election's going to be decided by women of color. Well, what about the male Democrats? I'll tell you know what? You guys got left high and dry. That's why I know so many people that have transferred over from Democrats to Republicans, because they like the message of Donald Trump and they don't like the message of Joe Biden. But James Carville, who was the architect behind the Bill Clinton campaign, you know, the Raging Cajun, as they say, from Louisiana, he's getting so sick of this PC nonsense that he's calling it for what it is. And he's pointing out, you know what, this stuff can actually cost us the election. It may hand it, if you would, to Donald Trump, because nobody likes Biden anymore, especially the men. You know, who agrees with this? This is fantastic. My former colleagues over at Fox, some funny guys. Let's listen to Jesse Waters talking about preachy females. Greg Gutfeld, too.
Based on pigment and not people.
I never thought Gutfeld and Carville would be the ones speaking bravely on behalf of men. Men have been neglected for far too long. Quote, if you listen to Democratic elites, NPR is my go-to place for that. The whole talk is about how women and women of color are going to decide this election. I'm like, well, 48% of the people that vote are males. Do you mind if they have some consideration? Carville says preachy females are ruining politics. The Squad, Pelosi, Kamala, Binder, The View, every woman on MSNBC, or everyone who identifies as a woman on MSNBC. Not my words. Carville said it. AOC's peeved. She says maybe he should start a podcast about it. I hear men are really underrepresented in that space. Where did all the men go in the Democrat Party? Manchin's leaving. All the male mayors, all they do is blame and complain. Where are the men of action on the left? Whatever happened to Newsom? All they have left is like Fetterman, barely. Trump's at football games, UFC fights. He's not nagging us about what kind of car to drive. He just wants to protect the country, not into pronouns. Biden's falling off bikes, licking ice cream cones and sipping through straws and leaving the gates to the country wide open. He's apologizing to illegal immigrants after they murder our women. The Democrats spend all day in sexual harassment training seminars and DEI inclusion therapy, jockeying to be the biggest victim. Carville continues, quote, no one wants to live like this, he said. Whoever thought it was a good idea to tell people you can't hug them, or you've got to be careful, or you've got to think about names to call them other than the name you know them by. There's nothing wrong with me being white, or you being white, or them being black, or me being male, or you being female. It's a giant, stupid argument. No, Mickey.
Well done. Well done, Jesse, and well done, James Carville. And you know what? Yeah, it's a rare day when you have Jesse and Greg and Trish and James Carville all in solid agreement. But look, you know what? Hey, we women, we have husbands, we have brothers, we have fathers, we have sons. And I don't think it's a healthy thing when you just shut out half the population, all right? Like, you need to. I hate to bring it down to basics, but you need a man and a woman. Sorry, Apple emoji, etc., to continue this thing. Okay, this great experiment here on Earth. So you cannot cancel out half the country and tell them they're no good and just constantly tell them that they're not good enough. I'm telling you, it backfires. It backfires. You see this actually in a lot of the polling that's done with younger people. A lot of teenage boys now are becoming more and more conservative in a lot of liberal communities. And the liberal moms are like, well, why would this be? How could this be? Well, if you sit there and you tell your son over and over and over again that he's no good, that he can't ever measure up because he's not feminine enough, and because it's his kind that have just ruined the country for too long. Well, guess what? At some point, that young boy is going to say, I'm not subscribing to this. Now, you put them in such a corner that they're going to say, I identify more with a movement that actually cares about men and wants to protect men, but not just protect, but actually put them up on the pedestal that, frankly, you know what? Like I say this, as a red-blooded American capitalist and a red-blooded American female, you know what? We need men, and we want men to take care of us and protect us and do all those things while still allowing us a certain kind of independence. Thank you very much, right? I've always said you can be very feminine and still be a feminist in that you believe in women and the rights of women to do whatever they want to do and pursue, but you can't do that at the exclusion of men. Men matter. And the more Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and AOC, for that matter, and Rashida Tlaib and the rest of them, the squad, try and tell us that men are no good, well, the more you're going to have a problem, don't you think, Joe Biden, with men. And so, Jesse hitting the nail on the head. Tucker's talked about this a lot. I mean, there's been a lot of studies, right, about why boys are falling behind. It's not rocket science here. We actually have to look out for men. This is a live show, by the way. So bring your comments in. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. We've been growing hand over fist. I'm so excited for this channel. I'm so excited for you guys. I'm so excited for myself because this has just been amazing. We are upwards of, what's the number here? 245? It's incredible. I was literally like texting my team the other day saying, hey, guys, we're at 220. 225. So it's just been amazing. So keep doing that. Keep sharing. Keep spreading the word. Trish Regan is here. I'm here every single day for you. We want to give a quick shout out to our wonderful sponsors who helped me look so good. Or feel so good, I should say. Balance of Nature, balanceofnature.com. I've been taking this stuff for a few months. It's fantastic. 1-800-246-8751. You can get a discount of 35% plus $10 plus free shipping. Mm-hmm. If you go to Balance of Nature and you use my discount name, my discount code, which is my name, Trish. So 1-800-246-8751. I'm not kidding. Like I've been taking it. I actually feel tremendous. And it's probably a good thing that I'm finally getting my vitamins because I have not been the best about that in the past. But it's just funny. I've told you guys this story before. When the kid's music teacher called me the other day, he's like, oh my gosh, I was listening to your podcast. Nice podcast. And I saw that Balance of Nature was one of your sponsors. And I was so happy because I've been taking it for years. And I just think it's amazing. I know that Leslie, you said you've been taking it. She's one of our viewers here. So great. Thumbs up to all of you and thumbs up to me for finally catching on. And I encourage you to do the same. Call them at 1-800-246-8751. Discount code Trish. Don't forget to use it. It helps me, full disclosure, and it also helps you because I don't think anybody's got as good a discount code as I do. $10 off, free shipping, 35%. Okay. MSNBC has a problem. You see, they have a host anchor problem. There's an effort underway to completely take total, utter control of the network away from the bosses, who I guess are rather impotent, and give it all to the anchors. You see, the anchors are now the inmates running the asylum there at MSNBC. I mean, we knew that they were kind of off their rocker to begin with, but you know what? These things don't happen overnight. These things happen when you've got, ladies and gentlemen, how shall we say, bad management? Yeah, that's bad management there at MSNBC, which is leading to all of this. So NBC News now apparently is in discussions with Ronna McDaniel to take her off the air because the anchors are so mad, so upset that they hired this woman because she had been or is seen as a Trump supporter. Now, let me just be very clear. I mean, the Republicans are like, bye-bye, don't let the door kick you on your way out, right? I mean, there's no love lost there. She was not seen as a success for the Republican Party. The RNC was really sort of persona non grata. We saw Vivek Ramaswamy call her out, actually on NBC's air, saying, hey, Ronna, during the debate, you want to just resign right now? You should resign right now. Anyway, despite all this chatter of how much the Republicans hate her, it turns out the Democrats hate her even more. And the host of MSNBC hate her even more than that. Word out just now that, in fact, she is losing her gig at NBC. I'll quote from, this one's from the New York Post. NBC News to drop ex-RNC chair Ronna McDaniel after Rachel Maddow, Morning Joe, revolt. NBC News plans to drop the former Republican National Committee boss, Ronna McDaniel, as a paid contributor after network stars. Can we really call them that? Including MSNBC primetime headliner Rachel Maddow, ultimate conspiracy theorist, and the hosts of Morning Joe, blasted the decision to bring the Trump-backing Politico on board. The network, according to the New York Post, has not made an announcement, but one is pending. Actually, forgive me, this is according to the original source, is Puck News. Dylan Byers over at Puck News. He's a pretty good reporter. So we shall see. I know he's got some pretty vast sources. So again, they don't want to ruffle the feathers. The bosses are terrified. I mean, what are you going to do if Rachel walks out? What are you going to do if Mika and Joe walk out? What are you going to do if you lose Lawrence, Larry, O'Donnell? heaven forbid, right? Any of these guys go, or Chuck Todd, for goodness sakes, we've got to keep Chuck Todd happy, right? Listen to these anchors going off on Ronna. Poor Ronna. Like, I'm starting to feel for her. Not, but, you know, I mean, this isn't right. This is cancel culture on steroids. To be expected. You know, frankly, she really shouldn't have succumbed to going to NBC in the first place. I'm sure there were better homes for her elsewhere. Let's take a look.
I'll be joined by former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel in her first interview since stepping down as party chair. In full disclosure to our viewers, this interview was scheduled weeks before it was announced that McDaniel would become a paid NBC News contributor. This will be a news interview, and I was not involved in her hiring.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation. And look, there's a reason why there's a lot of journalists at NBC News uncomfortable with this, because many of our professional dealings with the RNC over the last 6 years have been met with gaslighting, have been met with character assassination.
We weren't asked our opinion of the hiring, but if we were, we would have strongly objected to it.
NBC News, either wittingly or unwittingly, is teaching election deniers that what they can do stretches well beyond appearing on our air in interviews to peddle lies about the sanctity and integrity of our elections, but that they can do that as one of us, as badge-carrying employees of NBC News.
There is an easy way to avoid the controversy NBC News has stumbled into. Don't hire anyone close to the crimes.
She literally backed an illegal scheme to steal an election in the state of Michigan.
That is the type of experience that Ronna McDaniel brings to the table. And that experience does not get us to a deeper understanding of anything in the public debate.
I want to associate myself with all my colleagues, both at MSNBC and at NBC News, who have voiced loud and principled objections to our company putting on the payroll someone who hasn't just attacked us as journalists, but someone who is part of an ongoing project to get rid of our system of government.
I mean, that is just outrageous, you guys, just outrageous. And, you know, it's amazing because they think so highly of themselves. Oh, how could we possibly lend our name and credibility, as though you guys have any, at NBC News to Ronna? Oh, my goodness. How horrendous. How could we ever reward her? How could we ever say that anybody who's on the other side is ever worth talking to? You understand, again, you know, no love lost here for Ronna, but that's unacceptable. I mean, these anchors are so full of themselves, like the ability to contain and manage that situation, I kind of actually feel for the bosses there at NBC, it's gone. You can't. And perhaps that's one of the problems, actually, when you think about our country right now, when you have quote-unquote journalists feeding conspiracy thoughts and narratives as those people did. Then simultaneously so unwilling to listen to anyone else or listen to the other side, and then throw in a hissy fit when someone suggests that maybe we should have somebody from the other side. I mean, that is really unacceptable, and it's really bad. And by the way, I haven't been following the intricacies of the NBC stock price and Comcast, but that would make me very uncomfortable as an investor right now, seeing that display, because it tells me you got no hold on the place whatsoever. That is bad management. Bad management on steroids. I mean, you think they get it bad at Fox, and believe me, they do. That's a hard place to manage. And they can't. I mean, hey, Smartmatic's coming their way, don't forget. I mean, they already paid nearly $1 billion thanks to Dominion. But NBC? NBC is clearly also in a very, very precarious spot with those anchors. I mean, I'm cracking up because who's the woman that used to work for Biden there? The Peppermint Patty girl. Forgive me. I'm getting cheeky right now. But anyway, Jen Psaki. I was looking for those words. Jen Psaki. Like, it's not just everyone that can do this, right? You know, I mean, I worked as a press person for Joe Biden, which makes me super qualified. Not. None of those people, in my estimation, deserve to be on air. Rachel Maddow's kind of entertaining, albeit a conspiracy theorist. The others, I really don't know what to say. Anyway, apparently you have to be a Never Trumper to get a job there. You know, look, this sort of cancel culture on steroids is a very dangerous thing in my estimation. And it's gripping the country in really uncomfortable ways. It's one of the reasons why I support my friends over at JCN, Job Creators Network. Join JCN.com. That's where you should go right now, because they're all about helping individual business owners and saving individuals and helping them sort of prosper and flourish in the capitalist country that we still, last time I checked, are. So if you care passionately about these values, as I know you probably do if you're watching this show, I want you to go and check them out. Job Creators Network. Join JCN.com. You can become part of this and they'll help you. They'll give you the resources to make sure that you are being treated fairly in your community and in your state. They've got tentacles all over the place. Think of it almost like a conservative chamber of commerce. I don't know if they would totally agree with that, but I think of it that way because they're there trying to help you network with other businesses that care passionately about the same issues that you and I do. So go to joinjcn.com and learn more today. Quickly, I want to express my condolences to all of those that are dealing with the aftermath in Baltimore right now, the horrendous thing that we all woke up to this morning, the tremendous, really unsightful, god-awful sight of this bridge collapsing there. Do we have the video that you can show them? I don't want to like belabor this, but whoa. I mean, when you think about our infrastructure in this country, this was effectively a cargo ship that hit the bridge, and that caused it to become so unsteady as to fall like this. And we're lucky that this happened in the dead of the night as opposed to during rush hour traffic, because that would have been truly, truly, truly awful. I think it's high time that we pay attention to our infrastructure. I've said this over and over again, our grid, for example, but you know, bridges, the president has just come out and said he's going to use federal funds to completely rebuild this. He also wants to go to Baltimore. Look, he wants to have a presence there. We get it, for political reasons. I'm not sure why he still didn't go out to Palestine, Ohio, but you know, that was a missed opportunity. Anyway, he said he's going to go out there. He's going to come up with the money to replace this. Just a horrible, horrible situation. At last check, apparently two people had been rescued. There are six missing. Again, these numbers are changing in real time. So I want to qualify all that. My heart does go out to everyone. I would say this, look, we have to focus on infrastructure. It's really important in this country, but we've got to do it in the right ways. You've got to do it in ways that are real, not ways that are all warm and fuzzy and preachy female-like, right? As we were talking about earlier in the show. Not in ways that, as Pete Buttigieg would like you to do, because that's a little too ESG friendly and not enough nuts and bolts. Here is the Department of Transportation Secretary, and this was months ago, talking about the need for infrastructure.
If an underpass was constructed such that a bus carrying mostly Black and Puerto Rican kids to a beach, or that would have been, in New York, was designed too low for it to pass by, that obviously reflects racism that went into those design choices. I don't think we have anything to lose by confronting that simple reality, and I think we have everything to gain by acknowledging it and then dealing with it, which is why the Reconnecting Communities, that $1 billion, is something we want to get to work right away.
Because, you know, it's apparently all about that as opposed to just actually constructing good, solid bridges and roads for everyone. You understand what they've done, what they're continuing to do. It's really, really upsetting. But, you know, it's in part because you had some people there on Wall Street preaching this narrative over and over and over again. I mean, it actually originated out of Europe, and then Larry Fink, who's the world's largest asset manager, came up with it along the way. Hey, you know, if we could just buy into these environmentally, socially, social governance funds and diversity, equity, and inclusion all the time, and we can bid these stock prices up based on that, isn't that good for everyone? Not. Well, Larry seems to be coming to the realization that the answer is not, because you know what? When you're so focused on DEI and ESG, you wind up with a stock like Disney. Yeah, Disney, which has a whole bunch of non-hits recently, which actually sees its share price cut in half just in the last 3 years. And so now Larry's singing a different tune, and frankly, the right one on this, if you ask me. He's out today with his annual letter to shareholders, which usually is going on and on and on about ESG, ESG, DEI, DEI. Well, now he's saying, you know what? We have a retirement crisis because nobody's saving any money. And Larry, I'd agree with you on that one. We actually have to help people think about the future because people are living longer, and that's a good thing. We don't want to say, okay, no, you're not going to live longer. We want them to live longer. We want people to be healthier, and we want them to be prepared for the future. It's actually a big passion of mine. I've spoken to you in the past about 76 research. Do we have the little graphic for that, Drew, so that people can go and check it out? I mean, it is why I created this, because I knew, and I've heard over the years how important it is for people to save. I've heard from, I mean, everyone I've worked behind the scenes on the editorial side, you know, makeup artists, tech people that would come up to me and say, Trish, you know, I really need to think about my future. I need to think about retirement one day. And I've said over and over again, yes, you do. You know, as Larry Fink, before Larry Fink was talking about this, I mean, it's such an important message and one that you do need to take seriously. So I'm proud to have started 76 Research with my dear friend Rob, who also, like me, gets the insanity of stuff like ESG and how it's really not what you want to be focused on as an investor. But, you know, when Rob and I were planning this out, I said to him, I think it's critical that people have some kind of worth in their older years, right? In income that they can live off of. And what better way to do that than through good, solid companies that will yield dividends, right? Because that's income that you can have in your older years. And so when Rob and I put this all together, we put some model portfolios together. We were both very insisting, he has a background in this anyway, of having a dividend portfolio in there for you. So I just sat down with Rob. We talked about this just literally like right before I got on air with you. I want to play a clip from this interview with Rob Horton, my co-founder at 76 Research, about investing in dividends, because I'm telling you, this is what you need for the future. I'm right here with you. I'm going to join the chat and conversation, but let's learn a little bit about dividend investing. Here we go. Hey, Rob, good to see you. You know, ever since we launched, we've been getting all these questions from everybody about, well, how do I make sure that I'm protected in retirement? How do I make sure that I have income? How do I make sure that, you know, everything doesn't go up in smoke? And so I thought this was like a good opportunity for you and I, this is Rob Horton, by the way, I'm Trish Regan, you and I to kind of talk about all this, given that people are obviously understandably cautious. You want to make sure that you've got something there in your nest egg. It's one of the reasons why we created the Income Builder portfolio. But, you know, dividends, Rob, they matter, and they can matter a lot, especially later in life when you don't have that job that's providing you with the weekly paycheck.
Yeah, that's right, Trish. Dividend income is a really interesting thing to focus on, I think, from the standpoint of planning for long-term financial planning for retirement. You know, it's a topic near and dear to my heart. I love getting a dividend deposited into my brokerage account. It's like getting a paycheck without having to go to work, right? Kind of the American dream. But
beauty of investing, by the way.
I've been personally focusing actually on dividend stocks and dividend investing since about 2011, when at one of my old firms helped lead the development of what we call the Income Builder strategy. And this was around 2011. It was in the context of low interest rate environment. Treasury yields had gotten down close to 2%. And people were looking for income solutions, and they weren't really getting that from the bond market. So the idea was develop a strategy that really kind of leaned into equity income opportunities that would provide that long-term income generation that, you know, particularly as the baby boomers were approaching retirement, and that's where we are right now, fast forward 10, 15 years later, you know, looking to the equity markets to provide the income solution.
Yeah, and you know, jargon clarification for everyone. Most people know this, but equity markets being the stock markets and, you know, bond markets being fixed income, I'll give you a quick little aside. When I first started at Goldman Sachs, it was my first real job, and I was assigned to the fixed income department. And I remember we were trading, you know, sovereign debt, bonds in emerging market countries. And I called my parents, Rob, and I said, "What is fixed income? Am I supposed to be helping retirees or something?" I had no idea where they were even putting me. So it just gives you some perspective on, you know, that was a lot of years ago, back in 1999. But I too like dividends a lot. And that even goes back to sort of my childhood, when I can remember my parents, when they first started investing, and you're going back to like the late 70s there, and they started putting money into dividend stocks, which, by the way, they've kept this portfolio forever. I mean, this is a big part of what sustains them now. And my father's attitude was, "Hey, you know what? If the stock's going down, at least I'm getting paid for it." Which I always thought was funny and kind of clever, and actually incredibly important when you think about the longevity, right, of investing and how one day you actually do want to be able to live off of that. In his case, he was often reinvesting that money. My parents would reinvest, so that was like a dividend reinvestment plan they were on. All that said, it's a little more complicated than it looks, which is partly why you and I are doing this here today, because it's really easy to get distracted by things like yields, right? And you can say, you know what, this dividend yield is fantastic, and I'm going to buy this because of the dividend yield. But I think people need to be thoughtful, do they not, about how that yield compares and contrasts with the rest of the company itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, after years of dividend investing, I think there are a lot of pitfalls, and we'll get into that. But maybe we can really kind of start framing the discussion. You mentioned fixed income. And the thing about fixed income is that it's fixed, right? It's level. It doesn't grow. If there's inflation, it stays flat. So it could be helpful to take a look at the difference between an equity income approach, a dividend income approach, and a fixed income approach.
Well, and we've got some charts on that we wanted to share with the listeners and the viewers. You're right. I mean, because fixed income can be pretty attractive, and there's a place for it, by the way.
Yes. Yeah.
But simultaneously, sometimes over the long haul, what you're going to find is a better return in the equity market. Here we're looking at high dividend stocks versus the total bond index. And this is basically, if you were to invest, say, $10,000 10 years ago, what you'd be looking at. Walk us through it, Rob.
Yeah, so this is actually looking at the income generation of a $10,000 investment. If you're looking at two different options here, one is to buy an ETF called VYM, which I chose just because it's basically a proxy for the high dividend portion of the stock market. And then the other one is BND, which is an ETF that's a proxy for the total bond market. So it's really kind of comparing the total portfolio of high dividend stocks versus the whole total universe of bonds. And you can see, if you went back to put $10,000 into it in 2014, out of the gate, you actually had a bit of a higher yield from the stock portfolio. But over time, it really, because of the growth in the dividend stock index, it really, ended up more than doubling the bond investment. And really, this completely understates the point, going back to the point you made earlier, where you do have the opportunity to reinvest dividends and kind of compound that income growth. So that's just looking at the $10,000 receiving all those dividends as cash flows and not reinvesting.
You know, there's another chart here, which kind of, I think, articulates it well. If you look at, say, high dividend stocks versus the total bond index, right? This is the Vanguard total bond index versus that high dividend yield index ETF. And again, actually, this is a pretty drastic story, I think, when you look at these two charts.
Right. And this one captures that reinvestment of dividends. So we're looking here at total return. And you can see, if you bought that high dividend yield ETF 10 years ago, your total return, this is all indexed to 100, so your total return was more than 150% over that 10-year period, whereas with the bond ETF, it was less than 20%. So really, you know, as I was looking at this chart, I was thinking, you know, what's the right analogy? Is this the tortoise and the hare? But really, you know, that's not even right, except for because eventually the tortoise is supposed to catch up with the hare. And maybe the two lines intersected briefly during the pandemic. But the reality is it's more like a car versus a bicycle. You almost feel bad for the bond investors. And, you know, when looking back at this graph, the amount of money.
Sure. No, cost. I mean, but some people, you know, and not to completely poo-poo bonds, because I think that, you know, it's important to have a diversified strategy. But, you know, and often there's a tax advantage to bonds, especially if you're in a certain category of wealth and income when you look at munis, for example. And so you get to factor all that in. But that dividend benefit, I think, and the ability to compound that actually can be pretty incredible. And then you think about, again, going back to this chart, the bicycle and the car. I mean, this probably, in fairness, is not even indicative of the entire equity market overall, because stocks in general have just been on such a tear. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But I guess the bottom line is you want to be invested in the stuff that's really going to be long-term able to service you in your retirement.
Yes. If you have a long time horizon, the outperformance, the higher return that the stock market can offer you, it really hits home when you look at it, how these numbers compound and play out over a longer period of time. And here we're not talking about 50 years. We're talking about 10 years. Of, you know, very significant outperformance.
I think that's an important thing to remember. I mean, you know, if you have 10 years and, you know, look, you can't time the market, and that's not what we're about at 76. I mean, if you think about us and what we're trying to do, it's really to help people invest for the long haul so that one day when they do want to retire, they're going to have that opportunity and they're going to have that income. There's another chart, a little complicated, but let's throw this up here anyway, because this is explaining the 10-year treasury yields versus credit spreads over the last 10 years. You want to take a stab at this one?
Yeah, sure. You know, we'll start with the top. It's the 10-year treasury. And really, you know, this we can pivot a little bit into a discussion over bonds. I think we've had a lot of interest, you know, what do you think of the bond market now? The argument I would make at the moment, as we sit, we're at a point now where the 10-year treasury yield is about 4.25. And you can see in the top chart, it's sort of towards the high end of where it's lived over the last 10 years. One of the interesting things, and maybe the most interesting thing about buying government bonds, buying something like the 10-year treasury, is that it is usually what we call, you know, negatively correlated with the stock market, meaning, you know, when the stock market zigs, treasuries zag. So you see the real kind of two major episodes, the global financial crisis, obviously the stock market crashed, bonds, treasury bonds rallied in that situation. So the yields came down, meaning the bonds went up in value. And during the pandemic as well, the market crashed, bonds went up in value.
Sure.
Yeah. Now, sure. A big exception to this was 2022. That's a scenario where the Fed started tightening, interest rates went up, we had inflation, both stocks and bonds did poorly.
Aha, all right. So interesting material. Rick, I'm sorry it was making your head hurt, but you know what? Like, sometimes we get to take our medicine, right? I'm going to leave the entire clip up. There's like a 21-minute long interview. And actually, Rob gets into one of the holdings in the model portfolio, so it's worth watching, if nothing else, for that. And it's actually a holding that my parents have had forever. So how's that for a tease? On one's favorite dividend stock. Anyway, I also put in the discussion for you guys, because there's a discount code. You should use it. Divs, like dividends, DIVS76, because it's 76 Research. Three guesses why we picked that name, right? 76research.com. And then I put the link in for the actual model portfolios. There's like 10 to 15 stocks in there. And look, Rob has done this his whole career. And he's amazing at it. He's managed billions of dollars. And when I sat down with him and said, you know, like, we've been friends forever. I was like, listen, there's a need in this marketplace. And we have to be able to help people without the institutional bias that makes us say, oh, well, we like Disney, even when Disney's doing stuff that Disney shouldn't. Remember when I told you, by the way, that the friend of mine was investing in Molson Coors on the day that the whole AB InBev, Anheuser-Busch, was going south because of the Dylan Mulvaney thing? Well, that was Rob. So that was a smart play, was it not? And then at one point he went and he actually sold the Molson Coors because it was just sort of like a fun trade to be kind of the anti-ESG environment. That was an easy one that Wall Street wouldn't tell you about. In fact, they refused, these analysts on Wall Street refused to come out and say that AB InBev was a sell, right? Bud, as it's known, BUD. They would not say that it was something you should sell. I mean, one analyst who was overseas, like, finally rated it a hold because they're not willing to tell you the truth. We have no incentive other than to tell you exactly what we think. And I'm pretty darn good on this macro stuff. I've been around the markets long enough and have seen what really tends to transpire. And of course, he's been knee-deep in the research of all of these companies. So I encourage you to go check it out. We're going to leave it there today. We're going to continue watching shares of Truth Social there, everyone. Truth Social, DJT, way up. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you hit a like. Make sure you share the content. And I'll be back with you here live again tomorrow.